You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Laura O'Connell-Dapeter is the director of Action Station, which is an independent, crowdfunded community campaigning organisation. Recently, the organisation created a program called Tauiwi Tautoko, which gave non-Māori or Tauiwi the opportunity to undergo training in order to be able to combat racism towards tangata Māori online.
Last year, Action Station members came together in community halls and cafes and even McDonald's in Gisborne to reimagine the future in 2040. It was a response to a call from Moana Jackson, actually, who had done similar work in Te Ao Māori with 500 hui all around the country, I think it was, and about 5,000 Māori taking part to for what made up eventually what was called the Matiki Mai Report, and that's a vision from Te Ao Māori for the future of the country in 2040. And the call to action at the end of that was for Te Ao Pākehā or Tauiwi to do the same thing and imagine what we want the future of the country to be in 2040. And so we decided to take up that call and organise Action Station members all around the country to gather and discuss the future of our country in 2040. That date is very specifically chosen because it's 200 years since Te Tiriti or Waitangi was signed. And what came out of that was that, because we grounded the conversation in the values we want to see and at the heart of our public life, at the heart of government decision making and at the heart of the way we treat each other, what came out of that is we want to see a country that's based on aroha, manaakitanga, kaitiakitanga, community and belonging, equality and fairness, and a bunch of other really beautiful values that I think can help steer us. But what also came out of that is that Action Station members decided we wanted to prioritise truly honouring Te Tiriti or Waitangi, and in turn that means decolonising our institutions and our structures and indigenising our institutions and our structures. And part of that, I think, is that we need to undo the negative and ongoing harmful effects of colonisation and its racism. And Action Station's ambition is that that work shouldn't always sit on the shoulders of tangata whenua, because tangata whenua are often burdened enough, and it should always be informed by tangata whenua. And so what we've been doing is we decided to gather a group as a pilot project of 20 tauiwi people who signed up for a two-month pilot program where they would commit to a hui at the beginning to learn more about Te Tiriti and our history, and then 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours of conversations online each week, trying to challenge racism in online spaces and also educate other tauiwi about our history. Then at the end of those 2 months, we have another hui, we reflect on that, and we create out of that resources so that anyone anywhere wanting to have these conversations, not just online but offline as well, can pick up these resources and take from our learnings so that they don't have to start from scratch.
I'll come back to the program, but I just want to touch on the conversations that you had and this kind of envisioning what our future looks like and talking about decolonizing and those sorts of efforts being made. I mean, these conversations are happening, but often people are kind of stuck as to what the practical steps towards that are and what, you know, how do we actually action a commitment to Te Tiriti or Waitangi? What does that actually look like? And here's something that you guys have put together that is actually a very, very practical way of going about that, which touches on not only one, carrying the burden, but two, responding to some pretty horrific hate speech, which is the kind of gist that I get of this program. So why did you pick that as something to focus on?
A couple of reasons. One is that there is a review coming up of the Harmful Digital Communications Act, and we want to share our findings from this research to inform that review that's taking place, because what we know is that anyone that just goes to any stuff or comment section or Facebook thread about any media story, to be honest, about Māori, you'll find racism. And so we, right now, the Harmful Digital Communications Act, the harm that's being spread online has to be targeted at an individual, and it has to be, it has to be intentional, like the person has to, you have to know them. So the Harmful Digital Communications Act works best, for example, if a relationship has fallen apart and then that person is now pursuing you online and threatening you or bullying you online, then you can take those digital communications to NetSafe, and they will do their best to work with you to stop that harm from happening in online spaces. But it doesn't at all help people who are part of a group. And so if you're Māori, we know that the suffering of one Māori person from the Māori worldview, because it's a collective culture, that the suffering of one Māori person is the suffering of another Māori person, because that suffering is indivisible. And so, you know, an attack on one Māori person is an attack on whakapapa. And so what we're hoping to do through this work is to showcase that actually hate speech needs to be, and harmful digital communications needs to be widened in its scope and its definition to include the types of speech that is denigrating to entire groups. Because often what's happened over the last, my entire life, is that people have been given a free platform to spread bigoted views towards people of colour or women or young people or children and any kind of group that has, an imbalance in power in society. And then they've been protected under the guise of hate speech. I take the example of Al Nisbet, his comic that came out a few years ago that depicted his, not my words, but fat, lazy Māori who were making the most of free school lunches. The court found that to be objectively offensive, but it was protected under free speech, and so it was allowed to be published in one of our, and continues to be online in one of our largest national newspapers. And so I guess the focus for us is, in digital communications, is that there's this upcoming review. We have a chance to influence it, but also Action Station is a digital campaigning organisation, and we are good at organising people over the internet, so we thought let's organise people to tackle that racism online too.
I don't know if this is helpful, but I guess going further into that, a lot of people might turn around and say, oh, you know, it's just the internet, or it's just a few people, you know, don't listen to them. You can just kind of brush those ones off. What would you say to people like that?
So last week I was at the NetSafe Online Safety Conference, and Lani Wendt-Young, who is this author, she's Samoan, she's a woman, and she lives in New Zealand. She's an author who's famed for also sharing her political opinions, and on Facebook she has received she's got 800 screenshots of literal death and rape threats. But the problem is that the threats are in Samoan, and so when she took them to Facebook, they didn't have any Samoan language speakers and weren't able to identify the threats. And then their response was to say, "Oh, we don't have quite enough context, so we don't know we don't know the cultural context here. Like, this might be okay." And I read the translated version of some of the comments that she had translated, and they are truly awful, and there's absolutely no nuance, and it's not difficult to understand. And I actually think she has them on her Twitter if people want to see them. But she took those to the police to try and get help, because, of course, if you're getting death and rape threats in real life, that is what, in the offline world, you would go to the police and you would ask for help. But the police's response was basically, "Oh, why don't you just stop writing about these things that aggravate people online and set up a new Facebook profile? Essentially, why don't you silence your voice so that these abusers can continue to abuse you?" And that is fundamentally wrong. And so she actually did do that. And when she did do that, what ended up happening is that the abusers didn't stop, and they actually started targeting her husband and then her child. And so that's when she was overseas at the time, when she learned that they started targeting her child, and she got really angry at that and decided, no, enough is enough. Me silencing my voice hasn't resulted in me no longer being abused and harmed. And so she went to NetSafe, and NetSafe helped her to make the appeal to Facebook. Facebook refused, they appealed. Facebook finally took down the pages, but then the pages appealed and they're back up there. And the reason that all of this toing and froing can happen is because our Harmful Digital Communications Act is not strong enough and our hate speech laws are not strong enough. What we're hoping to do through this work is to showcase just how harmful digital communications can be, so that we can strengthen our laws, so that we don't have to organise these 20 tauiwi to go into these spaces to fight what should be regulated.
Okay, so let's go back to the 20 tauiwi. I'd love to hear the process of how you went about organising this. I know that there was some training involved. What sort of kind of information did you pass on to these volunteers?
So the first thing we did is we had a steering group meeting with some people who are like treaty educators and people who are studying. Basically, it's a researcher. Her name is Emily Boussoulet from Massey University, and she's studying how to increase people's receptivity to hearing the issues of socioeconomic inequality. And so she's essentially studying how we get people to listen better to people with lived experience of the issues in our world. And so we had the steering group meeting with those folk, and they helped us to shape the program of training that we would then roll out. And so the first hui was mostly about relationships, because as well as asking these people to step up and do this quite hard work, we also wanted to create a community in which they're supporting one another through that work, because I know for myself, being able to go into spaces with other Māori, and especially other queer wahine Māori, and, you know, just be myself is incredibly good for my spirit and helping to keep me going in the work that I do, just to be with people who have shared experiences with me. And we wanted to create something similar for all of this group. So the main focus actually in that first hui was relationship building, sharing food, sharing, getting to know each other, whanaungatanga, that sort of thing. And then second to that, we had Tim McCrina, who is a wonderful treaty educator. He works at the Auckland University. He actually volunteered his time, paid for himself to fly down to Wellington to our hui to spend the afternoon to share his knowledge in treaty education and treaty history. And also the work that he does at the Treaty Resource Centre, which identifies 14 main anti-Māori themes that have persisted since colonisation began and continue to persist throughout mainstream media, sadly. So that was the first hui. And then what happens is that every week we have a one-hour webinar, which is either with a tangata whenua, a Māori mentor, who comes in and shares their knowledge, or they just analyse some of the conversations that they've had together, or they just actually talk about how the experience is going for them. And we also bring in values-based messaging experts. So Marianne Elliott, who's the co-founder of Action Station, has done a training for them. And so it's quite a commitment of time. These 20 people are basically giving about 40 or 50 hours each over these 2 months, which, you know, collectively adds up to 800 to 1,000 hours. So it's a huge investment from this community of people. But what is really awesome and what really excites me is that Action Station is part of this international sisterhood of similar organisations in 19 different countries around the world, and several of those organisations have reached out, really interested in this model and are keen to roll it out in their countries and their context. So that's in Australia, that's in Germany, that's in Poland, and I find that very necessary and exciting.
In this context, though, there's that particular treaty relationship that's going on, right? And this is quite specific in terms of you've got Tauiwi or Pākehā people, right, doing this work. Can you talk a bit more about that and why that's necessary?
I guess one of the reasons I think it's necessary is because, one, I think that unless you have been a person who has experienced racism, it can actually be quite hard to see in New Zealand because it's not always overt. Like, I know for quite a lot of people, they tend to actively avoid staff comment sections. And I think that in and of itself is a little bit of a privilege, because if you can just tap out from racism, not all of us, especially those who face it day to day, can do that. And so part of it is asking people to lean in and to actually stand in the way of that racism, so that it's not always Māori who have to face it. And I'm a really big believer that when we ask volunteers to do something, we should also do the work ourselves. And so what I have been doing over the last 6 weeks that this Tauiwi Tautoko project has been going on is I've also been trying to do that in solidarity with the people in the trans community, because there has been a lot of anti-trans media and social media of late, and so I have been actively trying to go into those spaces where there's comment sections about that and stand in the way so that trans people don't have to have that hate directed at them. One thing that I'm learning from that is just the depth of hate that is directed at really marginalised communities, and the fact that hate is almost always layered. So one of the things that we're seeing through the Tauiwi Tautoko project is it's not just Māori who are facing a lot of racism, it's also sexism. So actually over the last 6 weeks, the majority of work that our volunteers have had to do is defending wahine Māori in positions of influence and with political opinions online. So Marama Davidson, Marama Falk, Donna Awatere, Kuata. That's essentially what we've found, is that it's never just racism. It's usually racism and sexism, or racism and transphobia, or some kind of intersectionality in the abuse that people face. And because people face that abuse day to day, we don't think that they should have to be the ones to educate their abusers about why it's not okay to do that. It should be people who aren't directly affected by that.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
The one thing I would add is that our hope next year is to roll out similar groups like this all around the country. And so, but of course, the people who will be rolling out these groups all around the country will already have the resources that we've created, so they're not starting from nothing. And And, of course, my hope is that they will build on the body of knowledge that we've already started to create, but they should already have, like, templates, for example, of, like, when someone says this, here's a good thing that we've found that you could see. And if anyone anywhere is interested in either joining or leading one of those groups, then we'd love to hear from them.
Just as a side note, I'm reading this stuff about, I guess, media and fake news and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about how there's research now which shows, because these conversations are happening online, right?
Yeah.
It's saying that the more that you kind of argue online, the more it polarizes each person's position. Do you have sort of concerns around that, or is this merely just so that there is an opposing voice in that kind of void?
That's a great question. So two things. One, we very deliberately from the beginning have said that we're not trying to convert racist people online. We're trying to show the lurkers, which is actually the majority of people. So most people don't participate in comment threads on Facebook. Because if you think 94% of New Zealanders have a Facebook account, and not all of those people are uploading and contributing all of the time. Many people are just watching those things take place. Our target is those people. Typically what would happen is you would go to a Facebook thread and all you would see is toxicity and negativity and hate. And as a person who's just watching that, what you start to believe is that, oh, maybe my country is full of racist people. And that in turn starts to become a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy because we all start to believe that. And that leads to, you know, an erosion of social cohesion and all of that sort of stuff, which might sound really dramatic, but I truly believe that it does, because increasingly we're spending more and more time in online spaces and there's no real line between our online world and our offline world anymore, especially for younger people who have never lived in a world without the internet. And so our goal was always to introduce a different perspective so that the people who are watching those conversations can see that not everyone thinks this way. And in fact, they might just be a very vocal minority. And then the other thing is that we trained our volunteers to approach their conversations not to fact check or myth bust people, which is what causes the polarization, because we know from just heuristics and biases in our brains that when we hear information that's counter to our worldview, we actually just reject it or we dig into our own belief system even more. So instead, what we're training people to do is to ask questions, to ask the person who's making these comments to interrogate their own thinking, so that we can actually get them to be a little bit more honest about their racism, because actually what we're noticing is people hide behind various things that maybe they've said years and years, and when you ask them to go a little bit deeper than that, actually, then they get to the real response, which is usually just like, I just think that Maori are violent or something like that. And when you hear someone say that, then you can say, well, I fundamentally disagree with you, and that's the end of it. And so asking questions and approaching the conversation with values and thinking about the, you know, 70-80% of people who are watching the conversation, not actually participating, those are the three main focuses for us.
The Wire.
For the second part of the Tauiwi Tautoko piece, I spoke with Kate Collins, who is a participant in the program. I spoke with her about her involvement and started by asking why she got involved.
Part of it was because I was looking... I just really love Action Station and what they're all about. I was really impressed with their vision for their overall project and wanted to get involved. I've also had in the last year or so, I've had my conception of our history in Aotearoa and how people are affected by colonialism has really been challenged, and I have come to think of it in a much more seeing it as a much more important thing that we need to do something about if we're going to become the country that we like to pretend we are, where we give everyone a fair go and everyone's respected. That's not an accurate depiction. It's just how we like to think of ourselves. It's a comforting lie.
How did you come to be in that position where those thoughts were challenged?
That was essentially in a university classroom. We were talking about the gender binary and gender identities that don't conform with that, which is something I know quite a lot about. I'm trans myself, but there was a word that got thrown to the group that none of us could even pronounce, and that was takatāpui, and just the fact that none of us knew what that was, even though we could discuss what whawhawhine meant or what two-spirit meant, it really troubled me, and my engagement with that particular word, and to see that heteronormativity that's a problem for me and lots of people I know, see that that is something that was taken from Māori through colonisation really changed my perspective of colonisation and how it affects people.
I'm just trying to relate to what you're saying in terms of the way that it sometimes takes something quite personal, right, to sort of understand it a bit more.
Well, to be able to sympathise and be able to, because you can see yourself in those shoes, because in some ways you have been in those shoes. But, I mean, not in the same way, but in a way that you can better understand how it might feel.
And that's something quite important too, is understanding that you would never necessarily understand fully, or you'll never actually feel what it might feel to be colonised as somebody that is Tauiwi or is Pākehā, that has benefited from those systems that are in place.
And that's absolutely true. But I think as well, lots of us, colonisations have such a massive effect on the world and caused so many problems. I think lots of us are probably affected in some way. Obviously, if you are Pākehā, you also benefit in a lot of ways, and it's really, really important to be able to see when it benefits you and why it benefits you, in order to be able to say, no, I don't need this. This is something, if we're going to fix the situation, we need to be ready to give up that privilege.
Kia ora. In terms of the program coming about, what was it that put you into the position where you thought, this is something that I should do, or this is something that I can do?
A lot of it was just, I spend a fair amount of time on the internet arguing with people anyway. It's just a sort of a byproduct of studying sociology, maybe. I get really frustrated when I see people being wrong publicly. It's hard not to disagree. But this mahi and the way Action Station's approaching it has really challenged me to go about disagreeing with people in a really, really more positive way. And I think that's helped me develop to engage with people with aroha rather than just going straight at them with counter-arguments and facts and try and myth-bust and tell them they're wrong and be able to prove that. It's much better to be able to listen and say, okay, I hear why you're coming from this perspective, but have you been able to think about it from this other perspective that's also really real for a whole lot of people?
There was a number of trainings that were part of this program. Were those helpful, and what did you take away from those trainings?
So I found the first one really, really good because we got to meet each other, and because you were supporting each other as a group, that was really good to be able to have that, be able to put faces to names and so on. We had a look at what we have been doing and what's done, what's been effective and what hasn't been so effective, and that's obviously been really powerful, and be able to say, okay, now we need to do more listening. We haven't been doing enough listening. We need to ask more questions, and we need to reframe how statistics are presented. Like, instead of saying Māori are being disproportionately represented in prison statistics, say, you know, the police are disproportionately putting Māori into prison. I think that was really useful. And another one that really stuck with me is the idea that you need to rebuild a person's entire, narrative, because people have an idea and they have a reason why they think that thing, and it's like a big, long chain of reasoning, and lots of that reasoning might be bad, but if you just try and replace one link, then they'll just be able to come up with some cognitive dissonance to be able to replace that as well. And I think we all do that in some way, to sort of, you know, try and reinforce to ourselves that the things we hold to be true are true, and they might not necessarily be. So that's a useful thing just to bear in mind for justifying the things you hold to be true anyway, which aren't necessarily.
Is there anything you'd like to add, or is there anything that you would, as advice to other people that might want to kind of take up this sort of work, or is there, are there things that people can do just in their everyday lives in this sense? Like you say, you were already kind of having arguments on Facebook, but are there other things that we can do?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure I'd probably be the best person to answer that question, because you really want to avoid doing something that's like got all of the right intentions, but ends up perhaps doing more damage or misrepresenting the cause. I mean, so it's really important to listen to what Māori people say and try and share those experiences and give those people a higher platform if you can, which is why it's been really important to Action Station that this project has had a lot of Māori input in terms of oversight. But if you get the opportunity to join in something like this, I think Laura is trying to upscale the program and turn it into something that is a national thing, then these things are really great. And it's good to just learn about our history from various different points of view, in particular ones that are sympathetic to the Indigenous experience, and then you'll be in a better position to talk about it. But yeah, I think learning is probably the most important thing we can do.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.